So, thinking about what I had to offer tonight, I just did a writing exploration of a concept or a way of appreciating practice that I think is a theme that I return to over and over. And so I was exploring the concept of wave and particle, entity and flow. As I was talking to somebody about, or they were asking me, how do parts work, working with the different parts of ourselves, how does that interface with the experience of deconstructing oneself or letting oneself decoagulate in the light of awareness, which actually we experience all the time, but we may not recognize or appreciate that that's happening. So, who are we? What are we? I asked during the meditation. Who or what are you if you're not reacting, if you're not telling a story about yourself? Are you a who? If you're not a who, then what is the what? Who are we? Consensus reality is flush with the outermost level of this. Consensus reality is a cacophony, a mess of I am this and you are that. But we are doing something differently in our Zen practice. Who are we? Well, it depends on when you ask. That's one answer. It also depends on how you ask. Depends on where you ask. One thing we are is we are roles in other people's lives. I think is a very interesting thing. You could try this out next time you're in a social environment, especially if it's a group of folks, some know you, some don't, or some have longer or shorter history with you, to try to imagine who you are in the eyes of others. But not through your inner critic so much as you are a presence in the awareness of someone else, at least so it seems. We can't actually verify that. You're a presence in the awareness of someone else. Who are you in that awareness? Yeah, sometimes my partner drops in on these sessions, right? She's just like, "Oh, you're just Jogan who says a bunch of stuff and then gets irritated when I ask you to take out the garbage." Or someone else I might have fooled in this group that I know something. Though we play so many roles, and in a sense, we are how we are beheld. Yeah? Her perception is no less or no more true than anyone else's. My sense of what I am is not more true than someone else's. Actually, they're equally just perceptions. That's an interesting thing. We tend to think that we have like the kind of the front row seat on who we are, but says who? Says the mind that sits in the front row seat. So we play roles, we're seen by others as those roles, as the person inhabiting a role. What's the internal experience during that role playing? So let's say you're a parent. You're doing the action of parenting, in theory, saying no, saying yes, moving phenomena around. That's about all there is to parenting. But during that parenting, saying no, saying yes, moving phenomena around, do you actually have an experience of parent internally? Is there such a thing? Or let's say you're a grad student. And no one would refute that you don't have the experience of hearing someone in the role of teacher speaking. But is there actually an experience that you have of being student? What's the internal experience during the roles we play? I'm not having an experience right now of being teacher. Just words are coming out of my mouth. Some of them I wrote down. Some of them are just coming out of my mouth. Right? I can hear my tone of voice. It might be different than my talking to my girlfriend voice. But maybe it's not so different. When we are playing a role, do we inhabit it? Is it actually play or is it identity? Right? This is an everyday opportunity for us to look at the liberation of not self. Now, these words mean, how seriously do I take the role I'm playing right now? Do I not want to play the role? Do I overplay it? Can I pick it up and can I put it down? Some of us have trouble picking up the roles and really inhabiting them. And some of us have a lot of trouble putting them down. Yeah. Some of the best parents, in my experience, I'm old enough now to have seen some of my friends have children, or I met their children when they were young and now those kids are grown up. And some of the parents that seem to be the happiest and have the best relationships with their children, they knew how to be mom and then not be mom. They knew how to be dad and then not be dad. And I mean in the good way. Same with teachers, I think. I find it scary when, for example, spiritual teachers can't actually stop being the spiritual teacher. That makes me suspicious. Do you experience yourself putting on the role like you put on clothes and then taking off when it's done, or does it come home with you? That's its own kind of suffering for us and for other people. Yeah. I know some of people who are therapists all day, they bring the therapist in the apartment door and the people at home are like, oh no, why don't you hang that on the coat rack? Studying the interdependence of how we be. How does who you be arise? Context by context. Even room by room of where you live, you might be activated as a different being during that time. I go into my kitchen and I'm like, I face one wall and I'm the guy who's really into coffee. And I'm like, oh, I love coffee. I probably need to order some more coffee. And then I come into my practice room here and I go, oh yeah, Dharma. And my energy changes. There's no fixed self. We want to pay attention to that. I guess what I'm riffing on is, sometimes the teachings are saying, please look very closely and see that there's no bone in the mind. The mind has no bones. But also our everyday life is showing that to us all the time. We just have to appreciate it. How does who you be arise and with whom? We could get even more sensitive in the interpersonal field of practice and be curious, how does who the others are arise? In other words, what role do we play in who other people arise as? I talk to many people who what they really want is somebody who will see them. Yeah. Well, what aspect of us do we want people to see? What's embedded in that desire? There's parts of me I don't want people to see. I don't even want to see those parts. But then sometimes I actually really do. I really want them to see the parts that I don't want to see. We can like imagine that we know who somebody is because we spend a lot of time with them, but there's somebody else, if not a tree or a squirrel, that sees that person as a different being. And that's equally true. That's very frustrating for that aspect of us that really would like things to be neat, tidy, and concluded. There's nobody we know completely. Zero. Not even ourselves. It's not possible. Isn't that amazing? I think that's really cool. One of the experiences that I have is this coming in and out of being someone. When I meditate, I can't find I. I is not there. We could give a name to what is there. You don't need to. Lots of people do. Or we could say, when I meditate, Jogen as entity becomes flow. The kind of in-cockpit experience is just textures and openness. Openness is textures, because those aren't really separate. And in that openness, the preferences that articulate a personality, the opinions, the particular desires, that openness actually has no preference for preferences. They can be grabbed onto or let go. And they flow through when Jogen as entity is transparent. In other words, entering the ritual of Zazen. Letting go of being somebody. In contrast to the bindedness of identity and self-image, that's quite a relief. I like to say that what we're gaining is freedom from self-image. It's totally optional. You don't have to have one. Developmentally, probably like teenagers have to develop a sense of who they are in relationship to the others, to the world. Sometimes people ask, can we forget the self before we have one? Probably not. Or maybe we do a little bit of the work of discovering who we are while we forget who we are, if we're a younger practitioner. Maybe this applies to older people too. But freedom from self-image. Is like, I don't know who I am, and I don't need to know. And because I don't need to know who I am, I don't need to know who others are. So as openness, concepts might present pictures of others, people's places and experiences, but I don't need those. As openness, as awareness, why don't I need those? Because I'll discover who you are when we meet up. I'll find out when it happens. Why do I need to know ahead of time what anything is? I mean, if you're an engineer or you're building a house or, well, of course, those practical things, yeah. And I love this space. I love this space. This space is a daily blessing. This is what Zazen is. It's the blessing of not being somebody. You're not being somebody, and yet there's an awakeness that is shining right through that not being somebody. It's not an empty void. And I get up from the cushion. I leave my little practice chamber. Do I remain flow? Do I remain wave, etc., as I say good morning? As I clean the litter box? As I view the news? Do I become particle? Do I become roll and lose the space of awareness? Do I become self? Do identities become me? People who do meditation retreat are faced with this concern, or this concern tends to arise, like, okay, yes, I tasted that, but how do I not lose it in the everyday rigmarole? Yeah. Can I watch in the wake of Zazen becoming become? So Buddha talked about this almost as if life is woven through with a thirst to exist. And on the personal level, that's the thirst to be someone who exists in time, who has a past, a future. With the past and future come goals, fears, anticipations. Can I watch that happen? I'm not going to crush that. That's not Zen style. I'm not going to try to cut that off. But can I watch that unfold with an unclouded eye? Does that seem contradictory? It's not really contradictory. Can I watch myself enter a role and then completely let it dissolve? Can I watch identity unbecome? Can I enter the role without even identity? And maybe I cohere from reactivity. I react to something and the patterning of being a separate person hardens. My contours are made amplified by my reactions to things, positive and negative. But then a moment of presence and that can be undone. So this morning I was undone by the taste of a dried cranberry. Contact without concept. Yeah. There's a whole category of teachings where one just lets the pleasurable or painful, but pleasurable sensation permeate so fully that you just recognize there's just awareness there and not a self. It's not so different than how we are lifted out of our narratives by a beautiful piece of music or by a painting. Ordinary everyday things can have the same function. Like we've been working with body sensation as something that just cuts through distraction. Yeah. Undone by the taste of a dried cranberry. And maybe remade by being asked if I can run the errand. Somehow something says, I don't want to. No, I don't want to. Do you recognize that aspect of it's so primal? That's kind of, is it 2 years old? Is it 1 year old? I don't want to know. It's so basic and so instinctual. In the cosmology of some traditions, they really appreciate this alternation as this, like the basic dance of the universe. Openness is playing as form, or emptiness is playing as form. You could use that term too. And then form getting loose in the space of presence. Form consenting to flow for the fun and free flavor of it. And this idea that not just that the universe is seeing itself, but the universe is playing with itself. Because why not? What else is there to do? But it may take some work to get to the place where it's play for us. Like the old saying that, an accomplished Zen Roshi plays in samadhi. They roam and play in samadhi. In some sense, we're trying to appreciate how we cannot just be such patterned beings. What do we do about being so conditioned? It's very boring. We bore ourselves by being ourselves so tightly and so predictably. And it's interesting, even if you practice a long time, you recognize that you can plug right back into your old conditioning. Can a person who's awake fall back into the old habits? Many of the koans were curious about the same point. I got this image of conditioning a few weeks ago that it's like the sockets on the wall of your house. Now, you could have a socket. Now, this is granted your power's on. Let's say the power's on. I guess that would mean you're alive. That's part of the metaphor. You could have a socket you haven't used for 10 years, but it's there on the wall. You've left it alone. It's collecting dust. You forgot about it. And yet you can plug something into it and poof, it lights right up. There it is. We can always plug into our patterns of being, our identity structures. No, I like to mention that the theory of Buddhism is that some people never can again. They never will and they never do. That's yet to be proven to me. But we can plug in, but maybe we can make plugging optional. How do we attain that option? Think about the ways that we get plugged into patterns that we go, ugh, I did that again. I was that guy again. We tend to think others plug us into them. They made me do it. The devil made me do it. Devil always makes me do it. I don't make me do it. Or we make ourselves into the devil. I made me do it. Therefore, I'm the devil. Do we actually enjoy being plugged into our patterns? Do we secretly agree to that? We can't underestimate the how compelling the familiar is, even if it's too tight for us. Even if it's too tight. Like I've been saying, like how cats can have a whole house to roam in, but they love to jump in boxes. Love the little cozy boxes. Small places. We could investigate it like this. How do we move from naked sensation to perceiving, to labeling? I am experiencing a painting that I kind of wish I didn't buy, to having aversion. How do we get there? Because actually where we exist is naked sensation. Isn't that the basic place? It seems that way. It seems like every morning we wake up, the very first thing is naked sensation. We don't even know who we are yet. We open our eyes and there's sensation, and then the mind kind of kicks in like an old computer. Remember you used to turn on a computer and like you'd hear the fan start whirring and, you know, the metaphor is almost no longer relevant because they just turn right on now. But it seems like the self is like that too, but it's not. You can catch it, boot up. We want to see how the self boots up. How do we move from naked sensation to being someone having an experience? Not that that's bad. That's part of the play. Apparently openness decided to do that. But it's no fun if you can't undo it. It's like it's fun to dress up, but like it's really fun to come home and take that off as well. That's part of the fun, is that you get to take off the costume. The Buddha said something in the Dhammapada. By the way, I recommend the Dhammapada. If you've never read it, it's a kind of excellent early recording of some of the essential teachings of the Buddha. There are like 99 translations, maybe more. It's a classic. And I'm paraphrasing, but he said that a contemplative can be like an unstruck gong. Yeah. On one level, it's like it's an image for equanimity. Just like a bell with the gravitas of a bell, just hanging there. But it's pregnant with the ability to sound. It's ready to burst forth into full expression. You might appreciate practice as an alternation between being an unstruck bell and then a bell that's sounded at the right time. And then returning to be an unstruck bell. Holding the potency. And then coming forth in the right moment, being brought forth in the right moment. It's very different to be stationed in emptiness and to be lived forth from that, to be activated by circumstance, than to be like a pinball, kind of batted around in reactivity. Both are expressions of self, but one comes from a different ground. It's not actually a different ground. It comes from awareness of the ground. So we're letting meditation invite us into an uncongealed flow. I think it happens whether we say I was there or not. I think it does. In some sense, all of the methods of Dharma are like coaxing that along. Some heat to help uncongeal self. And we touch an openness that is not grasping at being or not being anybody. And then to whatever degree, carry that space forward. And watch what happens. That's what I was thinking about today, besides coffee. So.